We have gathered here today to celebrate a life well lived, the life of Dick Bonser. On behalf of the family, I want to welcome you to this celebration of life. We've come to remember and to grieve. We also come to share those remembrances with each other and to rejoice with laughter as well as tears, as having been a part, however big or small, of Dick's life. For it is true, as Cahil Gibran said in the Prophet, when you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. As part of today's gathering of sharing, we will invite each of you that has a story, an anecdote, or other remembrance of Dick's life to share that. We will surround that time with songs that Dick loved, readings, a eulogy, and a few words of contemplation. And we start with the Prairie Choir. Thank you to the Prairie Choir, and also thanks to Mike and Dolita Chaprou for the prelude. Mike wrote that. It's called Memories of Dick for this occasion. Thank you very much, Mike and Dolita and the Prairie Choir. Next, when Jeff is done here and ready, Julius has put some slides up. We'll turn these front lights off. Mike, if you could reach the leftmost of those switches over there. Now they're over. The other one. Yeah, that one. That'll give us a little bit. And Jeff has a reading of some words from Seneca.
Centuries ago, the Roman philosopher Seneca wrote, "In the presence of death, we must continue to sing the song of life. We must be able to accept death and go from its presence better able to bear our burdens and to lighten the load of others. Out of our sorrows should come understanding. Through our sorrows, we join with all of those before us who have had to suffer and all of those who will have yet to do so. Let us not be gripped by fear of death. If another day be added to our lives, let us joyfully receive it, but let us not anxiously depend on our tomorrows. Though we grieve the deaths of our loved ones, we accept them and hold on to our memories as precious gifts. Let us make the best of our loved ones while they are with us, and let us not bury our love with death."
Let's sing "Morning Has Broken," which is number one in the Prairie songbook.
Praise for the morning.
Julie has lost her voice. Julie has lost her voice, but she still wants to start reading a eulogy. Joella will probably take over in the middle of it. So, Julie?
I hope I can find a voice. Is that gonna... Okay. I thought with the mic I might be able to do this. We had a memorial service in Tucson, and Nancy Graham, who's also a member here at Prairie, celebrated the service, and I had her read it for me, but I thought that I might be able to do it without crying too much. I started off saying, Dick was a suspenders and belt guy who followed the Boy Scout rule of be prepared. He always wanted to have the right tool for the job. He carried bandages in his billfold in case someone needed them. He would spend hours poring over the pocket tools at the sporting goods store. He had several Swiss Army knives and Gerber tools, such as folding pliers, that he could carry on his belt. There were items for which he had no sales resistance, such as jackets, caps, pocket knives, and the most expensive collection of all, cameras. Every year, he wanted the latest digital camera because it would have more pixels, a better lens, image stabilization, and other bells and whistles. I had Jeff go through a lot of Dick's pictures and pick out what he thought were the best. So that's what we've got here, is some of Dick's best works. I think this was truly his creative spirit. He had many hobbies over the years. He took up jewelry making in the 70s when I said I wanted a liquid silver necklace. He went down to the library mall and looked at it and says, I can do that. So he did. He started then into lost wax casting to make rings and pendants. And as I said, he was an outstanding photographer. He dabbled with embroidery at one time, which invoked a comment from a Prairie member that he must be anal retentive because of the perfection of the chain stitch on his shirt. There may be a bit of truth to that statement. And a camping friend, Mitchie, introduced him to soapstone carving, which can be done with a pocket knife. He moved on to wood carving. His dream was to have a workshop where he could practice his wood carving. He achieved the dream when we moved to Tucson and we bought a place that had a workshop. He gave away most of his carvings. I think he actually had one sale, but the rest of them he just gave to friends. The first one he did was a lighthouse, which he gave to my mother, because he noticed she liked lighthouses. He started riding motorcycles in 1970 when we lived beyond the end of the bus line. He would ride to work year-round. In winter, he would wear a snowmobile suit to keep warm during the Wisconsin winters. And I know many of his co-workers remember Dick coming to work in his snowmobile suit in the winter. He had some near misses on the slippery city streets and only stopped riding year-round after many years when we could carpool to the office. He also graduated to bigger and bigger motorcycles. He started small, and his last one was a BMW K100 that he sold when we retired to go on the road full-time. Dick belonged... You'd think I was an adolescent boy. And Dick belonged to a few organizations over the years, and in many of them he became an officer because he was someone who would contribute. He was a member of the Madison Motorcycle Club and was elected president several times, and then went on to serve as the American Motorcycle Association District 16 president. He served as vice president and housing and property chair of Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, and then he edited the society newsletter for 10 years. He said part of the reason he did the newsletter was so he wouldn't have to serve on the board. So I know he put a lot of effort into producing a well-designed newsletter. The year after we moved to the near west side, the Dudge and Monroe Neighborhood Association was formed and he became treasurer for several years. Later, he became one of the founding members of the Hemlock Society in Wisconsin. I met someone this last winter in Tucson who knew Dick from those days. I understand they have a different name now, compassionate something, I don't know what it is. He started that because he saw a friend of his mother care for her mother who had advanced Alzheimer's, and that was one of Dick's fears, is that he would lose his memory, and he didn't want to be in that position. Instead, he had metastatic cancer that carried him away. Interestingly enough, he didn't choose the Hemlock Society remedy. He stayed, you know, until his natural life ended. I had some difficulty writing this eulogy because we were together the last years 24/7, as they say, and it was hard to kind of extricate him from us, but I tried. I think I'm going to have my daughter carry on, so you can pretend it's her.
Dick was born in Dayton, Ohio, to William Elabonzer, who predeceased him. He was an only child who spent much of his time with adults. He must have been bitten by the travel bug early when he lived in a small trailer in the Baraboo Hills above the Wisconsin River when his dad was an engineer, during the time that Badger Ordnance was being built at the beginning of World War II. At 2 1/2, he had blonde, curly hair and wore eyeglasses, bib overalls, and had a corn cob bubble pipe. People would give him a nickel to hear him repeat the big words. People would ask him to say. Later, he and his mother traveled to the Yukon to join his father, who was working on the Alcan Highway. He remembers coming across the moose tracks while they were out for a walk. He lived in Madison, Wisconsin after the return from the Yukon, and had fond memories of the clear lakes and fishing trips with his parents. His family moved to Hawaii when he was in middle school, and he graduated from Roosevelt High in Honolulu. My mom put together a photo album with some early pictures of Dick that's out in the front area. He attended Oregon State College as he wanted to be a forester like his uncle. After one summer working for the Forest Service, he learned that his vision would not permit him to work in the woods. He then majored in geography. My mom and he met at Oregon State on a blind date. They married in 1960, then moved to Canada, where Dick worked as a local and regional planner, and he studied for his master's degree at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, British Columbia. Next, Dick worked for the City of Vancouver, Washington, as a local and regional planner for 3 years. Both of his kids were born while they lived there, then they moved to Wisconsin because of Dick's fond memories of Madison. He worked for the state of Wisconsin in a department that had several name changes during the 28 years he worked there until his retirement in 1996. Dick delighted in reading aloud to his kids. One of our daughter's fond memories of this past year is having Dick read Hop on Pop to his grandson Caspian, which is also the picture on the front of your service. He and his Joella shared many hours working together on jewelry. He and Jeff went on many trips together on the motorcycle. Eventually, it says I had my own BMW, I'm assuming that's my mom. And then we took several camping trips by motorcycle. One was around Lake Superior during a very cold and wet August. I remember that well. We enjoyed 11 years of full-time RVing until they settled down at Desert Pueblo over 55 Mobile Home Park in January of 2007. Dick had been living with bladder cancer since 2001. In 2006, he learned he had myelodysplastic syndrome, which is a rare disease affecting blood cell production. He became severely anemic and could not have chemo treatment when his bladder cancer spread to his kidneys and lung. Dick was delighted that his family could visit him this past year. In August, his granddaughters Izzy and Callie visited for 2 weeks while he was still able to go on outings to several of their favorite places in Tucson. In November, he enjoyed playing with his grandson Caspian, who at 20 months was willing to sit on Grandpa's knee for a story. We loved to go out to eat and were pleased that our son Jeff could join them at Joe's Crab Shack, where we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of our first meeting. We celebrated the anniversary of our meeting because we knew that we would not be able to celebrate our 50th wedding anniversary. Dick's last outing was to the Sonoran Desert Museum on November 13th, when my mom's sister and their husband were visiting from the UK. He had such fun seeing the new exhibit of Life in the Rocks. I took a picture that showed his joy in being there. Dick lived with the knowledge that he had a terminal disease for over a year and was gallant in his battle for quality of life. He told me one night that the end is the same, and what I can do is choose how to behave, and I choose to be kind.
Let's sing number 59, the Garden Song. Yeah.
One thing to know about this is that the chorus is with the music, and then it's also repeated there over on the right-hand side, so don't sing it twice. To start, it'll go on to the second poem we use after in the chorus. But we do start with the chorus.
Thank you, Mary and Mike. No life can be told in full by any person, and certainly not in a short eulogy, nor even if we had many days as a lifetime to do so. But in sharing of stories, we help fill out a picture of who a person was, and in that spirit, we invite those of you that would like to share remembrances to do so. Mary will be passing a microphone and speak into that so everyone can hear, and the recording will take place. And this is one way that we celebrate Dick's life, through sharing the memories that bring joy to our hearts that he lived. And Julie asked me to read one that comes from Joyce and Bill Hodges in Tucson, and I'll start with that. Bill and my first experience with Dick was on a cold, rainy day in January. His motorhome was parked behind our double wide. Bill knew that Dick and Julie enjoyed playing bridge and went over to ask them to join us. Before I knew it, Dick and Julie were sharing some happy experiences of traveling. The conversation moved to the card table, and the beginning of many more bridge games was started. The rain turned to snow, and soon we were involved in deciding on a supper menu. The afternoon revolved so quickly, and we had a lovely frosty day with our new friends. Dick was very knowledgeable with camera and internet equipment. Many a time he would come to our aid when we had a technical problem. Whatever Dick did for anyone was done with much kindness. Bill and I never knew such a gentleman. Our last trip with them to Sierra Vista, to the Cowboy Poetry Festival, was a special occasion for all of us. His love for Julie was always apparent, and his appreciation for all things big and small was a constant part of his life. The special thing we will remember about Dick is a kiss he blew to us when he was very sick. Dick was a gentleman to the end. Although we were unable to be here for Dick's memorial, that was in Tucson, Julie knows that Dick has a special place in our hearts. Julie does also. We know that Dick is in heaven taking pictures for God's scrapbook. So we didn't have a chance to know Dick in Tucson, but we did have a chance to know Dick in Madison. So we'll take about 10 minutes and have a chance for those that have remembrances to do so. And Mary, since you have the microphone, you can start if you'd like.
Okay, I'll just give you about 30 seconds here. One thing I remember about Dick is that he did embroider, and he told us about it, and that's why I'm wearing my hand-embroidered vest here in memory of him. And it's unusual for a man to be embroidering as an adult, and probably even as a child. And the second thing I remember about Dick is that he talked about growing up in Hawaii, or spending time in Hawaii from his middle school years on. And he talked about how there was bias against people who weren't native Hawaiians there, but he didn't let it turn him against other people, nevertheless. Next person.
I was glad to be able to play recorder for Dick. Dick collected other things, including recorders. And he sometimes even played them. We had a small recorder group that met from time to time, and every once in a while he would come and join us and play along, and that was nice. It may come as a surprise to some of you that I actually used to own a motorcycle. Not for long, because I realized I didn't belong on one, but Dick taught me to ride it. And he was very patient and very kind, and probably was glad I didn't stay with it.
I could go on and on, but and Julie's right that it's hard to kind of tease out memories of the two of them. Our families spent a lot of time together when our kids were all adolescents, early adolescents to sort of later adolescents. And to me, the symbol of that is when Bob and I were married, they gave us a bell, a large bell that we lived out in the country at the time, that we could ring to call everyone in when it was time for a meal or time for their kids to leave our house. But there's a couple of other things I remember. Dick had one of the early computers in our group. He had a Mac. I think it was a Mac or Apple. It was an Apple, yeah. And when we did our Prairie Cookbook, we all went over to their house. So, and then Dick had to teach us how to use it, because of course none of us had one. So we typed all the recipes in for the Prairie Cookbook on their computer, so that it could be printed out. And the one memory that, as we were talking, really popped out in my mind is one time when, as a group, we were playing the non-competitive games. I don't know. There was a book that was very popular, and one of them was where the music plays and you keep removing a chair. Only in the non-competitive game one, if you didn't have a chair, you sat on somebody's lap. And the last time there was one chair, Dick was on the bottom, and the entire congregation was spread out on his lap.
My name is Dan Madden. I'm from Dick's work world. Maybe most of you don't get to hear too much about how well-respected and the like that he was in his work world, but that was the way that I knew him. And sometimes the kids particularly like to know that about their dad. And I can say that Dick was widely respected, and the words that came to my mind were, he was colorful, and I think you've all colored that. That's no big surprise for you. He was very creative, and he was kind. Those were the three C's that I had for Dick. One of the things that you might not have known about him was that he was a very popular public speaker. I used to give training sessions with him, and he was one of the top authorities on something called the Davis-Bacon Law. And it sounds real dull, doesn't it? But you know, when he was going to talk about Davis-Bacon, the place was crowded. They really liked to hear. He had a very clear voice, a charismatic way of speaking. And the last thing that I'll say in my 30 seconds is that I remembered about Dick was that creative side, that there was a time back in state service when people didn't have computers on their desks. I know it seems like a long, long, long time, but in our shop, guess who was the primary advocate for the shocking concept that he should have a computer on his desk? He won, and we all won, and that was Dick.
Well, my name is Jim Grunzel, and I was Dick's supervisor at the Department of Development, and I got to second what Dan said. You knew that when we did development projects all over the state, and you knew that when Dick was the person that handled that project, you knew it was well handled. But I have to tell you one thing. We also went fishing together, and we had a fishing group, and we were up in the Chippewa Ploid fishing with me in my boat. And we didn't have anything on Jimmy Carter because we had an otter attack our boat. And Dick very, very courageously fought it off.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that when we first met Dick and Julie in the mid-70s, when we were members of Prairie, Dick was making name pins. And I'm wearing the one he made for me, and Galen is wearing the one he made for him. He asked us what was special, and at that time I was doing cookie houses, so that's my pin. And Galen is a botanist, so there we are.
As you look at all these pictures up in front, you won't believe what I had the good fortune to have happen to me. Dick Bonser taught me photography. And when I decided I needed more work in this, he helped me go out and select a particular camera, and he knew them back and forwards, all cameras. But anyway, this man was the genuine thing, you know. He was without guile. He was so straightforward, and he also knew what he was teaching.
My name is Rick Recking. Dick and I were started a men's group at Prairie, and I was going to say he's obstinate, but that's not the word. It's persistent. We started together, and we gained a group of about, I don't know, 6 or 8 guys, and then amongst all of us, we started fighting with one another, and Dick was the only argument that he and I had, and of course these were arguments and fights, but was related to feminism, because he could say that he was a feminist, and I never could reach that point. I couldn't quite achieve that, but anyway, I did enjoy being in the men's group, and by persistence, I'm pretty persistent too, because eventually then it was just the two of us meeting. After a while, it pretty much exhausted what we had to say, but I wanted to say that Dick also expressed in that group the enrichment of his life in having foster children, and I think that was, I'll remember that.
I just wanted to say my dad really was always a very generous person, but he also made sure that people didn't go without what they needed. I can remember how many foster kids we took in over the years and everything that my parents did for them. But he also made sure that his kids never went without either. I know that through all the years, he always made sure if I needed glasses, I had the best ones I could possibly get. When I moved away to go to college, he made sure that I had a computer when a lot of people never had them. There were so many things that he's done for so many people, and he was just such a wonderfully generous man.
You know, I think I really knew Julie better than Dick for many years, because we were both social workers, you remember that? And then Jeff was good friends with our son, John. Do you remember when you went to camp and our daughter, Helen, used to babysit, and she was at camp with you up at Camp Black Hawk? But I finally actually got to know Dick personally when the two of you came Scottish Country Dancing. And I remember, well, a couple of things. One is a wonderful joke for Scottish Country Dancers, but I'm not sure the rest of you would get it. It's when Dick was talking through Trip for Bavaria, and he said every single couple who was changing hands with every single other couple. And I don't think anybody could have memorized that other than Dick. I mean, when he does something, he really does it properly. And then I remember the day he turned up in full regalia, a kilt, Prince Charlie jacket. He was absolutely splendid. Ah, lots of memories of you guys.
We have one more behind, and then we'll wrap it up.
I'm Lynne Kane. I met Dick and Julie in the early 70s when Julie and I were members of the same League of Women Voters group. And I was also with Dick when we were establishing the Wisconsin Hemlock Society. And he made a major contribution in those days by handling the newsletter.
I remember the first time I met Dick and Julie. Very few people you meet, you just know that you can talk to them immediately and know that if a friendship is something you want to pursue, you can. And Dick and Julie were that way. Just having them be in the world is something that I can lean on or was able to lean on. And I know that Julie is still there for all of us. And I will miss Dick so much.
Thank you all for those comments. No one mentioned purses. No one mentioned giving Jeff lessons in how to turtle a sailboat. But there are many other stories. And over refreshments at the end, you'll have an opportunity to share those with other people. No person can sum up the life of another. Life is too precious to be passed over with mere words. Rather, it must remain as it is remembered by those who loved and watched and shared. For such memories are alive, unbounded by events of birth and death. And as living memories, we possess the greatest gift one person can give to another. Joella. We'll, I'm sorry. Nope. My notes are not right here. Callie, next. Calidora, right? But we hear from Grandma that you really want to be called Callie.
Screen there. 'Tis a gift to be simple, 'tis a gift to be free, 'tis a gift to come to where you ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, we'll be in the valley of love and delight. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend, we shan't be ashamed to turn. Turn will be our delight, till by turning, turning, we come round right. 'Tis a gift to be simple, 'tis a gift to be free, 'tis a gift to come where you ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, we'll be in the valley of love and delight. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend, we shan't be ashamed to turn.
My mom helped pick out this poem and asked me if I would read it, and I'm very honored to. It's called They Softly Walk by Hugh Robert Orr. They are not gone who pass beyond the clasp of hand. Out from the strong embrace, they are but come so close. We need not grope with hands, nor look to see, nor try to catch the sound of feet. They have put off their shoes softly to walk by day. Within our thoughts to tread, at night our dream-led paths of sleep. They are not lost who find the sunset gate the goal. Of all their faithful years, not lost are they who reach the summit of their climb, the peak above the clouds and storms. They are not lost who find the light of sun and stars and God. They are not dead who live in hearts they leave behind. In those whom they have blessed, they live a life again, and shall live through the years eternal life and grow. Each day more beautiful, as time declares their good, forgets the rest, and proves their immortality.
Let's sing again, The Spirit of Life, number 108. We are gathered in the presence of a deep and abiding mystery. With humble hearts, we bow before the veil which has fallen between us and the one we loved. Let none fear, for greater than sorrow is love, which endures through pain and conquers even grief. Love binds all hearts in bonds of fellowship, in bonds of fellowship and courage. They who love unselfishly face even the depths with courage, for their strength is the strength of many, and their courage rests upon the love of friends. That's by Robert Weston. And now, may the peace which passes understanding, the peace which comes with acceptance and thanksgiving, the peace of God, of the Spirit which rises above all the strains of the earth, be with us and abide with us all, both this day and forevermore. Amen. Please stay for some refreshments and telling stories of Dick. Yeah, and we're going to move some tables out into circles, and if a couple of people could help roll some tables out, that would be appreciated.